Well, if I said to you that closing public libraries violates the social contract and you didn't know what that was, would you be able to look it up? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Is a public library a luxury that a financially strapped local government can keep whittling away at? Or isn't it? Our number statewide, toll-free, 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. In an internet age, where do libraries fit in? The subject today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Well, here we are, and boy, we hauled in the important dignitaries for this one, friends. We have the president of the Public Library Association joins us from her office in Parma, Ohio. It is Sari Feldman, president of Public Library Association and also executive director of the Cuyahoga County Library. Sari, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you so much for having me on this show.
Well, I'm just tickled to death that that you can be on. The first big public library that I ever went into was in Cincinnati. It's the first time I ever saw a huge volume of books in a library, and it changed my life, literally. So Ohio is close to my heart.
Well, we know that library users are civically engaged, so it doesn't surprise me.
Indeed they are. And one of the things I think we want to be talking about a little bit later on in the show, when we get into some of the statistics, is how people's use of libraries is changing. I think some people might assume that because of the internet, there would be fewer people going to the library, but actually library traffic all across the country, as I understand, it's been picking up for a while.
Yes, it's just incredible. We're seeing double-digit increases in the number of people visiting libraries and also the number of people borrowing materials from the library. But it will come as no surprise to you that more than 60% of Americans use public libraries for their internet access, even if they have internet access in their home. So we're really playing multiple roles in the lives of citizens.
I think it probably would be even more disproportionate in Alaska for this reason. In much of rural Alaska, connectivity is not all that it might be. And the internet that people are able to get at home is either through an expensive cable hookup, which is, as I said, expensive, or else they're on dial-up. And as we all know, there are many sites now that if you go into it with dial-up connection, it freezes up your computer for maybe half an hour. So you're kind of losing your research time right there. But what we also have is what they call the E-rate, which provides public facilities with broadband internet connectivity. And so I'll bet you it's even more in rural
Alaska.
Right,
and that's true across the country. We know that people are using libraries' internet connections for that high speed, which is not just about the ability to watch YouTube videos, but it's about the ability to connect into sites where you can apply for a job or apply for mortgage release or do your taxes online or seek any other e-government service that might be available. And also, even if people have a computer at home, have internet access, have reasonable bandwidth, most people still don't know enough about using their computer or about the internet to be able to, you know, do the work they need to do on the computer independently, and most people are still seeking support. And the library provides that professional support on a daily basis.
Oh, we're talking with Sari Feldman. She's president of the Public Library Association, and she also runs the library in Parma, Ohio, the Cuyahoga County Library, which she tells me is no longer burning, that people actually even fish in. I'm sorry about that slam. You say there.
That's okay. So I'm going to tell you I have 28 branches, three of them being in the city of Parma, but we serve the suburbs of Cleveland.
Yeah. In New York City, over the past weekend, the librarians conducted a read-in. This is because of looming budget cuts. And to draw attention to the importance of the libraries, they just read. You probably followed that.
Of course.
I am wondering if, librarians are there to help. They don't want to interject their values into the users. I mean, it's almost like a mania, one might say. And yet, in this case, not being politically active and opinionated and taking positions on something like the social contract might be working against you, if you know what I mean, Sari.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, we are a profession of people who are passionate about our work, and we will advocate to keep our doors open, because at the most basic level, people need access. People need to be able to get to the library and to be able to find professional support, updated computers, and updated collections. And we're in the perfect storm, even though that's a trite saying, where library use is up and library funding is down. About 62% of libraries anticipate flat or decreased operating budgets, and 24 state library agencies reported cuts in state funding for public libraries between 2009 and 2010. And so we are advocating for our citizens. It is not self-serving. It is about being able to provide that access for the public.
Well, if I can sharpen that point a little bit, Andrew Carnegie was, in a lot of ways, the founder of the modern public library movement. And he is an interesting study. He basically felt that his rise to be the richest man in the country in the 19th century was because of his access to a library that a guy had across the river from Pittsburgh that he had access to. And he also believed in social Darwinism. He believed that he deserved his wealth because he was the best at what he did, and that there was survival of the fittest. But beyond that, and we pretty well have discredited the theory of social Darwinism at this point, but beyond that, he also believed that there was no point in inherited wealth. And because that just would make your offspring worthless.
I think Warren Buffett agrees with that as well.
And there was no point in not taking it with you. In other words, leaving a whole lot of money when you die, because then they're just going to fight over it. And you were better off giving it away while you were alive, and you really should give it away, as opposed to privileging your own offspring. So that was his theory, and he lived up to that. He gave away most of his wealth. I mean, the vast portion of his wealth he gave away, and he used it to form these libraries so that people could rise up of their own merits. They would have the opportunity. And that brings us to the issue of the social contract. And the social contract is the idea that in a modern society where it's not stratified to where there's a upper and lower classes and so forth, and a person does rise on their own merits, they have to have the opportunity to do so, hence the libraries, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, we are really the great information equalizers. We're the only place where people of all ages and backgrounds can find and freely use resources that will help them in education, formal or informal learning, that will help them in job seeking. Again, I mentioned e-government before, will even help them in any of their personal interests or developing their own personal skills. And, you know, the Internet is a big part of that as well. It's certainly our print collections, but also two-thirds of libraries report they provide the only free access to computers and the Internet in their communities. And I would imagine that that is even higher in Alaska.
Yeah. Well, I have this from the Anchorage. Anchorage is about half the people in Alaska live in Anchorage. It's the largest city in the state by far, and of course it has a library. And the development director of the library, Claire, sent me this email saying, we just did a survey and our community plan with over 6,000 residents responding. It really tells us how the community wants the library to grow in the future. Our visitor and circulation statistics indicate that patrons still use the library to check out books and movies and attend children's story times. But in addition, the community also wants to see the library, one, played a greater role as a community connector and gathering place, and two, serve as a portal for improving our community's technology skills and increasing access for the technology have-nots. Despite a major budget cut in 2010, we've already been able to put many of the plan's recommendations into place and are seeing great results. And I guess that none of that would be news to you. That would be what you'd expect, wouldn't it?
Right, absolutely. You know, we're really part of a community solution during this economic downturn. We are a place where the community can convene. We provide incredible free access to materials and help support also, you know, the entertainment for families, really quality materials and books and DVDs. And then we can help entrepreneurs, small businesses. We can help people get back on their feet and back engaged in their past livelihood, their community. So we are really at the center of community life as, you know, a vibrant institution.
Well,
I just want to say, in this role in reinforcing the value of reading, which is certainly a core value for libraries, again and again, the National Endowment for the Arts says that people who are readers are the same people who are civically engaged, who participate in, you know, the arts and culture, in political life of a community. And so, you know, that has to continue. That can't be let go fallow during this time.
Well, now I want to turn to the harder part, which is the value equation. Where do you capture the value? If it's some form of public funding, somehow tied to the tax base, probably. But if you have local government wondering if they really are the ones that should pay the whole cost of keeping this public facility going, maybe there's some alternatives. Maybe there's someplace else to look for money from. And the first thing that occurred to me is when you were talking about e-government, every agency is saving money now by going to the internet. I mean, utilities are not wanting to bill you, for instance, and many, many other things. E-filing for the infamous checks that Alaskans get, you know, there's a huge pressure on and really getting to be significant penalties if you want to actually use old-fashioned paper to apply for your dividend check. They say, well, that means that we can pay a bigger dividend. Well, maybe some of that benefit of e-government, those efficiencies, need to be fed back to the user in some way into the libraries. I don't know how you design the equation to capture that value, but clearly there is a value there, and it would seem that the libraries would be a very good place for that value to go.
Well, that may be a reasonable discussion at some point in the future, but let me just say that libraries are among the most effective of all public services, and we serve more than two-thirds of the public, more than two-thirds of Americans use the library with less than 2% of all tax dollars. And nationally, the average cost to the taxpayer for access to a wide range of public library resources is $33.56. A year, about the cost of one hardcover book. And we return a lot to the economy as well in terms of support for, as you said before, e-government, but also for materials, for students, for adults returning to school, free access to the internet, DVDs for families to use as entertainment, support for small business, civic space for meetings. So we actually return a lot to the economy. And when the public is in a position to actually vote for their library, and that is true in Cuyahoga County, I go directly to the voters for a portion of the property tax, the public overwhelmingly supports taxes for public libraries because the public library delivers so much back to them.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe they're maybe that's something that other locations could use to fathom the public support. You have a little bit of that in the public broadcasting model, where you know, it basically, if a public broadcasting facility was unable to raise an amount of money from their listeners, the consumers of their product, you know, they would be penalized. They would not be able to get as much from public funding. You know, so maybe there's something like that that could happen.
Yeah, it's very possible. You know, long term, that may ultimately be the model, because I think communities want to see their public library remain strong and accessible.
Yeah, well, before we turn to the statistics here, I want to pass on this email from Justin Oldham, an author, who says, look, with much regret, I think we're going to see an eventual end to the concept of public libraries. It boils down to increasing internet capabilities and a change in social priorities. Governments will cut library funding so they can use that money on other things. Now, I was a booster of libraries long before I became a writer. I think they're vital depositories of information that also serve as a touchstone to our past. The printed page, as we have known it, served humanity well for more than 1,000 years. Those who love hard copy books say there's nothing else quite like having the weight, feel, and smell of a book in your hand. I agree. Books are special things to me. As a legally blind person, I've always been fascinated by the components and the history they contain. Last year, I gave a presentation at the Homer Library about the future of publishing and the potential for digital media. The cost to maintain just one public library can't be justified by public officials who are being called on to provide more and more social services. Older folks love the books, but younger people who are plugged into iPods and Kindles and smartphones can't relate to them. And then he goes on to talk about libraries as basically museums. I guess
you might... circulated 19 million items, 19 million physical items from our buildings last year, and more than 30 items per capita, and more than 10 million of those were books. I think we're a long way from abandoning the vibrant circulating library.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. We're trying to ground truth here. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about libraries, library reductions. And Sari Feldman is with us. She is president of the Public Library Association. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And already a lot of traffic here on the internet at talk@aprn.org. I want to turn now to a second guest, and this is from the American Library Association office in Washington, D.C., Lara Clark of the Office of Research and Statistics. Lara, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi. Thanks, Steve. It's good to be here with you and Sari as well.
Yeah. So here it is, 2 in the afternoon in Washington, 2:20. And what's the weather like?
Well, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but it's kind of hot and sweaty here, as you might expect in summer in Washington, D.C.
We have a nice overcast that has set into Anchorage, and the temperature is in the probably around 60 degrees right now. And we're kind of relieved.
That sounds really nice.
It's actually.
In Cuyahoga County, we're somewhere in between. How are you, Lara?
I'm good. How are you, Sari?
Fine.
Well, we have been. I've been in this discussion with Sari, and she's been telling me the values of libraries and the fact that library use has gone up in double-digit annual increases. And I wanted to get more detail from you because you're the custodian of the stats here. And so maybe you can tell me, it looks, one thing that I found out is that as the recession hit, a lot of people went to the library to look for jobs.
That's right. That's right. I think there's a lot of things. I was listening online. One of the great things that is available now.
All you librarians.
The radio online, and you can get your news online, which a lot of people really depend on. So I was hearing a lot of what you had to say leading into this, and I think there's several things that are important. I think I would just start by debunking the idea, and I'm sure that this is not new in Alaska, but that, you know, not everybody is connected to the internet and to online resources. And in fact, 73% of libraries in Alaska tell us that they're the only provider of free internet access in their communities, which is really important, I think, as we do see so many of those job opportunities, government information and services, even distance education. You know, it's becoming, people are able to do more online, but many people are still not connected. And that may mean that they don't have high-speed internet access, that may mean they don't have a computer, and it may mean that they don't have the skills necessary to navigate what is becoming a much more complex online world. And I think the library really can become that technology hub for people, and particularly in rural communities. I grew up in a very small town in Arizona, and this was kind of pre-internet, but the library still was this focal point for access to information and resources. And I don't think that that role is changing. And in fact, it's become even more vital with the internet, that the roles that libraries play as a provider of information and learning and access to the internet has become so important. And I think it's more important in Alaska than in some states just because of the geographic spread.
Very few people would quarrel with that, Lara, but I want to say this. Yeah. If you're in charge of statistics, obviously you have some demographic background, and you must realize that your customer base is going to age out.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because there's another study that that was done that was also funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as is the Public Library Funding and Technology Access Study, which is kind of a long name for some of the data that I just mentioned from Alaska. But they also looked at, you know, who's using libraries. And, you know, the most active users of libraries are teenagers, folks that are 14 to 18 years old and even into that next age range. So there's this, again, this idea that people come to libraries because they love books. And certainly there are many people, I'm one of them, but it's also people who are traveling with their netbook. It's also students that are coming after school to do their homework. You know, nearly a third of Americans age 14 or older, roughly 77 million people, used a public library computer or wireless network last year. And teenagers were the most active users. The more a power user you are of information and resources, the more likely you are to be plugged into your library in some ways, particularly if you're a young person, because it's not just about access to the internet. It's also about a social space with your peers. It's also about a range of resources. You may check out a book at the same time that you're logging on. And those resources and uses are not mutually exclusive. And so I think, you know, as we're talking about this kind of this myth busting that people are going to stop reading, that everybody's connected, that, you know, that these uses are going away, is just not true for what we've been seeing over the last 10 years. As the internet has proliferated, the use of libraries continues to grow, so that there's just really no basis in fact for that.
Sorry, Feldman.
And I also want to say that the National Endowment for the Arts study on reading, the most recent one, showed that we've started to see the reading of print on the rise once again, and that the largest gain is among youth as readers.
That's the most encouraging thing I've heard on this show in the last 3 years.
And we certainly see that. I couldn't agree with Lara more that there's something about the technology that is bringing people back to libraries, but the people who are coming to libraries are using all of our resources. So they're using the internet, they're borrowing books, they're borrowing DVDs, they're attending programs, they're holding their meetings in libraries. They're really engaged in everything the library has to offer. We're more active and vibrant than we've ever been before.
Lara Clark at the Office of Research and Statistics, you're probably one of these people that doesn't see it as a cause for alarm that a bunch of people gather at a cafe that has internet, wireless internet connectivity, and they're not, none of them are talking to each other because they're all sitting there tapping away on their computers. You probably think that's just fine, don't you?
Well, you know, from, you know, I have my research and statistical side, but I'm also a book reader. And I think, you know, there's different times for different uses. You know, we certainly hear for people that go to the library that they want to be around other people and they want to connect with people. They want to get help from a librarian. And many people come to their library to troubleshoot, and they do that with finding new books to read or to help navigate online and learn how to update their blog. You know, the types of classes that libraries provide around technology are pretty significant, plus kind of one-on-one assistance. So I think, you know, there's room for people to go to their coffee shop. There's room for people who may even have access at home. In fact, many of the people who come to the library are not necessarily people who have no other access. We certainly have those people who really depend on the library. But many people, you know, they use the technology everywhere they go, and the library is a big part of that. But the library also provides access to e-books. I believe libraries in Alaska actually have this great interactive homework help. And, you know, so there's ways that libraries are able to play to their strengths as information brokers and providers and experts to use technology in ways to support education and lifelong learning. So, you know, I think that there's room for the library as well as the coffee shop, but not every community is going to have that coffee shop. I certainly didn't in my town. I mean, I really depended on a bookmobile to ensure that I had access to those resources. So I think that in some communities, the library really is that space that is a physical meeting space. It is the place to get internet access. It's the place to connect with your neighbors, and it serves all of those functions. And no other agency really does that.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what Jill says over the internet. It seems that when budgets are cut, the libraries are some of the first to feel it. Libraries serve as a community center and a community becoming more fractured. A similar discussion revolving around the loss of a community as a gathering place and losing money focused on the post office. As more mail is sent electronically, fewer people gather at the post office in order to create a community space where free and important information can be exchanged. Communities can combine these services to eliminate some of the redundant expenses of infrastructure. Both services can share a building and possibly staff. Or consider that schools are community buildings with libraries that are only used by a small fraction of the population for part of the year. Can school libraries and local libraries be combined to be community libraries? Again, savings in infrastructure costs, possibly staff costs, could be seen by combining these functions. Adding the post office, and there you go. That from Jill.
Well, that's a lot of things to add in there. And I think that there are communities that are looking at that. I mean, I think libraries have been creative with their communities, and there are different kinds of solutions. I would say that closing the library should not be one of them. I mean, I think that closing a library is an extreme and unusual step, and it's very rare that we see that. We've seen lots of kind of nips and tucks as people try to deal with the struggling finances that they find themselves in. But fundamentally, people understand the value that libraries provide to families, whether that's for job seekers or for that's for students and supporting their education and lifelong learning. I think that there are creative solutions, and we have to be willing to look for them. But closing a library means that you're losing all access and you're losing all of those resources. And
they whittle away. I mean, mostly what they do is they whittle away. I mean, in Anchorage, for instance, they start chopping away at the weekend service and closing branches and whatnot. But I mean, there comes a point where you're cutting down into muscle and getting on your way to bone. And I think that's happening in a lot of libraries. That's why they had that read-in in New York City. It's Talk of Alaska. Right. We've got the president of the Public Library Association and someone from the Office of Research and Statistics of the American Library Association as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
In Alaska, more than 2,000 children are in need of foster homes, and more than 1,200 of those children are Alaska Native. These children need homes where they can learn who they are. Alaska Native foster homes can help pass on traditions, arts, and culture. Help keep Alaska's children safe and their heritage strong. Learn more at 800-478-7307. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The issue, reductions in library services, is it wise and how do we pay for our libraries? Today on Talk of Alaska statewide, the telephone number 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@APRN.org. We have Sari Feldman of the Public Library Association. She's the president. She's from Ohio. And Lara Clark, the Washington, D.C. office of the American Library Association. She does research and statistics. And we're clearly in a situation where there's a lot of change taking place. And what we want to see is how do we know the value of our libraries? How do we know in what way that value is changing? And what do we do about paying for it? Where is the value that can be captured? Where is money being saved somewhere else that can go to libraries? And what would be the way of doing it? One thing we've already found out is that people are using libraries to look for jobs increasingly. We find that there is a lot of use of libraries by young people who, as one of our email commenters said, well, the young kids just aren't into books anymore. Turns out maybe it's not as simple as that. And in some ways, we're dealing with a situation of varying timescales. A librarian has to deal with the world as it is, with people as they come into the door. And the rest of us, sometimes we can comfort ourselves with theories that maybe 10, 20 years different from the way reality is actually tracking. Let's go to Elston, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Elston.
Thank you, Steve. This is a great subject, and it's a subject that I have a lot of emotional connection to. I was raised in Fairbanks, and one of my fondest memories come from the time that I spent as a boy in the George C. Thomas Memorial Library in Fairbanks, and I used to actually go there and hang out and wait for the library to open, and then I would go inside. And I would spend time with the great books and in this wonderful space whose only purpose was to connect me with the world of ideas and thought. And, you know, Steve, it drives me crazy when I hear people talk about efficiencies and cost-cutting and measures that are somehow quantifiable when it comes to things like libraries. I think there's a social value in having a space that does not have an agenda, particularly a commercial agenda. I mean, our society has become this sorry swamp of commoditization, and it's really important to have a space that's dedicated to the human being as thinker. And that's something you don't get in a coffee shop. That's something that you don't get in Barnes & Noble, although Barnes & Noble is certainly a place of books. It is fundamentally a commoditization, a place for commoditization. And we really need to have our libraries. I don't know what would have happened to me, what I would have done as a young boy, if I didn't have access to that library. I mean, you know, given some of my tendencies as a child, I might have been a criminal. I mean, but thank God for libraries and librarians, and, you know, in these times of $3 billion capital budgets, I'll tell you how we can pay for libraries. We can just bloody pay for them.
And I love that.
You know, how libraries are funded is certainly a very local process, a very local decision. But I think what our caller just pointed out is that citizens really need to communicate with government and with libraries about their desire to see libraries being funded. I'm not calling for, you know, I'm not talking politics here, but I'm talking communication. I think that for a long time, people have taken the public library for granted. We are a very American institution. We're part of the fabric of people's lives. But we need to speak up for the value and the importance of public libraries as sustaining our communities and really building our communities for the future, both by educating young people, continuing the education of older people, and also supporting all of the endeavors of a community through information and education.
Yeah.
I don't know, Lara, if you want to weigh in on this, but...
Steve, can I say one more thing?
Elston, go right ahead.
All right, and then I'll go off the air. But there really are some functions of society that are not meant to be efficient in the sense of delivering widgets, and I think that's one of the vestiges of our heritage from the Industrial Revolution, and where hopefully entering a post-industrial age where we can really start thinking in terms of more transcendent values than efficiencies. And libraries are so important to us and our community.
Elston, I see where you're going with that. I want to see if I can sharpen that. One thing, when I think about the differences you were saying between the bookstore that has the cafe in it and the library, I'm thinking that it somehow resides in the area of possibility. In other words, something I learned in the library very young was that the possibilities in knowledge are endless, especially if you get to interlibrary loan. Any book that you see referred to in a book that you're reading, you can get that book. There's something so endless about that. And that's, you don't see that in the knowledge as commodity business. You don't get that feeling of limitless possibility.
Exactly. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you.
Well, this is Lara. I'll jump in there if I can.
You bet.
I think that also goes to what I've seen as part of the public library funding and technology access study is that when we visit rural libraries, that we hear that same theme, certainly around books, but also around technology. You know, that people come to the library and they often, even if they have a computer at home, They don't know the most effective way to get the information they need. And, you know, one of the folks that we heard from in Pennsylvania, you know, she came to the library almost every day because her computer at home broke. And what she found is not only did she have the access to the resources there at the library, the databases, the computer, you know, kind of the high-speed internet access, but she also had a librarian who helped her find resources that she wouldn't have otherwise found that actually led to her finding the job as a school teacher that she was looking for, because there were specialized resources that, you know, you didn't necessarily find in a quick search of Google. So I think that that's another piece of the puzzle in some ways, is that just as libraries have always connected folks with books, we're just as passionate about connecting people with that information and those resources online. And I think that kind of fundamental piece of libraries as a democratizing force will continue to carry forward, you know, whether it's in print or it's online or face-to-face. But those resources are just so important to people and able to connect, not only within their community, but, you know, now through the Internet in some ways across the globe, which I think is another just amazing thing that libraries enjoy and their patrons depend on. You know, when we were in a small community in Nevada, one of the people there said, she's like, you know, this has just opened up the world to me. And, you know, she'd go to several different libraries that she would drive several hours to because she wanted to take advantage of different resources that different libraries had available to them. So I think that, you know, people are standing up for their libraries and for those, for that public funding, at the same time that libraries and local communities are being creative, and we should look for solutions as opposed to assuming that, you know, the time that, you know, libraries are at the end of the road. Like, let's see where we can find smart connections that are cost effective and will adequately support the library so it's there for people when they want and need it.
Well, hopefully there can be a creativity of a sort that actually allows the libraries to grow and flourish. I mean, I think there may be ways of introducing some kind of feedback to where if the user can actually change the product, the product can actually start evolving. Sari Feldman, go ahead.
I wanted to say also that while I think we place a high value on customer service through our public libraries, and therefore we need staff to work with our users, and that may in some ways seem inefficient, I think that public libraries across the country are working hard to increase efficiency and actually are one of the most efficient forms of public service. We serve large volumes of people, we move large volumes of material, and we take a very small percentage of tax dollars.
Can you, does either one of you know if there is a, what has happened to the role of reference librarian? Because one thing that, there was a time in my life where I might go down to the library to look something up, but that is not really the case anymore because I know I can go to the internet and dig it up on my own, or my own, you know, facilitated by the wikis and so forth that are already there, the search engine and whatnot. Do you think that the reference librarians are as, that we need as many of them as we have had, or is that one of the areas where we can make some reductions?
Well, let me say that many libraries and state library consortiums have online reference librarians now. Chat with Librarian Services in Ohio, it's called Know It Now, and our reference librarians participate in delivering that service, so 24 hours, 7 days a week, people can ask their questions and get a response from a librarian.
Yeah, when I was a disc jockey, people would say, I remember this went on for years, is Porter Wagoner married to Dolly Parton? I mean, you know, I would like to have published that someplace so they didn't call me all the time. And I understand that actually reference librarians get the same deal quite a bit.
Right. And then reference librarians are also much more involved in facilitating learning, so they're participating in developing tools for people to better use internet resources. They assist people in using library databases. They teach technology classes. They develop other programs that are really an information delivery mechanism. So I know in Ohio it was very critical this year to do programs to help reduce the amount of foreclosure. And our librarians worked with other community agencies to make sure that we had regular programs on this topic.
Wow. So it's really becoming more and more of a people thing from what you're saying. There was a time when a library was hushed. It's not near so hushed as it used to be. The librarian had a certain like priestly reserve. I'm sensing that it's come to hands-on nowadays.
Absolutely. I think it's that connection between people and information, making sure that people have the information that they need and also know how, are teaching people how to access information in the future.
We got a note from I got a note from Dawn in Palmer here just saying apparently the late fees for library books don't actually go to the library, but to a general fund for the city. Maybe the late fees ought to go to the library. They probably do in many of them, though, I would think.
I would say that's more common, is that the late fees do stay with the library, but it does vary. And that may be one way to, you know, equalize things a little bit. I would just jump on with what Sari said to say two things. One, that it is what she mentioned about the online connection with the texting or the chatting or the email or instant messaging, where people are reaching libraries in new ways. But it's about 85% of libraries in the country provide some sort of interaction via chat or text or email. But also what we've heard from reference librarians is that, you know, some of those things that you just mentioned that might be easy to look up online, people are doing that if they have access to a computer. But the more difficult questions that may be less easily discovered through a quick search, reference librarians are taking longer with people. So they're finding that the questions that they're asking are more complex because some of the kind of the short answer questions are resolved more quickly.
Oh, I can hear it now. Will you write my term paper for me?
I don't know that that's a new question for librarians, but I'm sure it comes up pretty frequently.
Let's go to Mary, joins the program from Delta Junction. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to address this mythology that computers make libraries useless, because it really is mythology. You know, in the Delta Community Library here, we have Wi-Fi available and such, and the more people that we have coming to use our computers and bring their laptops and stuff, the higher our circulation goes. And while they're there, they wander in to ask something or whatever, they discover there was a book sitting there that they're interested in, and suddenly we've just made another circulation too. You know?
Yeah. You know, while I have you on the line there, Mary, you're a librarian then in Delta Junction?
Yeah, I'm a librarian, and I'm president of the Library Association. I'm a librarian at school, but
yeah. Well,
I'm very involved.
I am wondering, in the Anchorage Library, there's a lot of politics goes on. For one thing, there's the municipal assembly meets downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
For another, the theater is very, you know, run by a policy that there rarely is there any kind of even questioning about the, you know, how political something that somebody wants to use the theater for is going to be. It just doesn't come up. I'm wondering if you have that there too. Is this a public facility? You want it to be, I guess, accessible and value neutral, but you know, there's a lot of people that just have the really burning political issues, and they'd like to have that public forum. Do you ever see a conflict or have to say no to anybody for that?
We had a couple situations where we've said we didn't think what they wanted to do fit the library, but this is a small town library, and it's not a huge building, and very often those type of issues go away because we don't have what they consider enough space. And so for a small tour type thing, someone goes on a tour and they give a little show about what they saw or whatever, we work fine. It goes with our theme, you know. On the bigger items where they want a ton of public in there, they're going to have to go to a different building. So it solves some of those problems.
All right. Well, Mary, thank you for calling from Delta Junction.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. We're all with us by phone. We have Sari Feldman, president of the Public Library Association from the Cuyahoga County Libraries in Parma, Ohio, and Lara Clark of the American Library Association's Office of Research and Statistics. And we're talking about the changing role of libraries, which has really been kind of an eye-opener, and the value of libraries. And where I'm trying to get with the discussion is, how do we capture the value back to the libraries? And this is a difficult issue as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, helping unlock Alaska's energy potential, and by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. If you've been through a lot of bad things and you feel like everyone would be better off without you, suicide isn't the answer. You're not alone. You have people who love you, and there is help. Call the Alaska Care Line at 1-877-266-HELP. Call, share, and live. If you're thinking about suicide, call for help at 1-877-266-HELP. This message sponsored by the Mindy Schloss Memorial Fund and the State of Alaska.
Libraries are sometimes community centers, especially in small communities. From Charles Bingham, a shout-out for a couple of libraries he especially likes. One in Haines, the Haynesboro Public Library, and the other in Barrow, the Tuzzy Consortium Library. If I'm trying to take a class at Chukchi College, he says, where do I access the research materials I need for the papers I need to write? A small community library can be a vibrant community center. especially in a smaller community. And I'm sure, Sari Feldman, you see that, you know that.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so important. It's so vibrant. It's so much at the heart and the center of a community.
Well, let's say that someone who, let's say, a great libertine, let's say the Oscar Wilde of modern day, let's say, wanted to hold a salon in the library to talk about his what he believed about human sexuality. Where would that be likely to happen in your library?
We tend not to let individuals for a personal purpose use our meeting rooms. We tend, it tends to be more organized groups. If there was a demand for the conversation, we would certainly allow the use of the meeting room for the community. It doesn't have to be a formal not-for-profit. But we have many informal discussions that go on in our community. We know that people meet regularly to discuss a variety of topics that they're drawn to the library for a number of reasons. One, that there's library materials to support the things they're interested in. Much of this informal discussion is really a gateway to lifelong learning. We know that also people are drawn to the library because it's neutral space, so that I might meet up with people, but we're not necessarily agreeing on everything, and it's a great place to air opinion and ideas.
Yeah, well, the way I opened the program is saying, if I said to you that closing public libraries violates a social contract and you didn't know what that was, would you be able to look it up? And that's a forked question because, yeah, you can look it up. You can go in and Google around to your heart's content, and you'll learn more and more about the social contract. But, there's really no end to learning about the social contract. At some point, you really need to go in the library and pick up Rousseau and, have some reference library help you go around to the origins of the social contract and the applications and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it seems like we kind of need both, I guess I'd have to say.
Yes, what do we always say? On Google, you can get 50,000 answers to your question.
Right.
At the library, you can get the right answer.
I sense the slightest sense of competition here.
Well, Google is one of our competitors, but we think we compete quite effectively.
Years ago, when this whole internet thing hadn't quite happened yet, but there was a lot of speculation about the media is the message and the media are the message, I guess you would say, are the messages. I talked to a communication theoretician that worked for the phone company in Canada by the name of Gordon Thompson, and he said he was talking about computers and how they handle information and what could be done with them. And he proposed to me this idea of a serendipity machine. And actually, this is actually done. I mean, Amazon actually does this. But he said, what if when you were in the library, there was a little librarian on your shoulder who was watching the things you were looking at and watching what everybody else was looking at, and suggested to you that you might want to talk to that other person in the library because they've been checking some of the same titles and they could see the pattern. And I brought this up to a librarian friend of mine, and she reacted with absolute horror. She said, this is the last thing in the world that I would want to do is spy on people. And yet that's what we see. If you sign away your privacy and you go into Amazon, they will tell you what other people that looked at what you looked at are looking at. Maybe it's not so bad after all.
Well, and I think, people depend on libraries as those defenders. I mean, libraries also have always had a strong role as supporting people's free inquiry and the right to privacy to read and to search for the information that they need. And I think that's a really important role, which doesn't mean that people can't find other ways of connecting, where the library might not say, this is the most circulated book that we have, so it might be of interest to you. But I think having somebody, anybody over your shoulder saying, oh, you're looking at the same thing as this person down the hall is looking at, makes everybody a little bit anxious, and probably should, which doesn't mean that there might not be a way of connecting people. you know, to say, hey, I'm here. Does anybody else want to meet here at the library, whether that's online or in person? You know, but I think that that role of librarians as, you know, a defender of our right to read and to read freely, as well as to and have their privacy right protected, is also an important function and goes to that kind of democratic role as well.
Yeah, Sari Feldman, in a way, I think what we're saying is that there's no real substitute for human intuition, for having a real person there.
Absolutely. And actually, that Amazon algorithm is not the same as a reader's advisory interview that really gets at, you know, I liked a book, but I might not like it because of the subject matter. I might have liked the way it's written, and I want more books that are written in that style. And that Amazon algorithm doesn't get to that. It's the librarian skilled at reader's advisory that can help you find the next book you want to read.
Well, I agree. It's not the best algorithm in the world, but hopefully they'll invent some kind of AI that's better at it.
Well, let me.
I think it's called the librarian.
Well, on that note, I would like to throw out a plug for folks as well for the virtual branches that libraries are building. And I know the Alaska State Library is a supporter of this. And I mentioned the live homework help, and that is something that folks can get across the state through the state library and their local library branches, where they can get help with their homework, whether they're in high school or college or adult basic education. And I think that that's another way that libraries have been really creative, is that the state libraries may broker resources that serve every citizen in the state at a much lower cost than each individual library would be able to afford. So I think that's another way that libraries are being creative and thoughtful and careful with the public dollars that are invested in libraries. So
okay.
I just kind of wanted to, if people haven't been to their library website, I think it's worth a visit.
I want to work this last call in. Harmony in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska. We haven't even brought up what you wanted to talk about, so let's get it in there.
Yeah, I wanted to speak about the youngest user of the library. I have a 15-month-old, and we've been we're here in Anchorage, and they have this amazing Lapsit story time most days of the week, and the viewership of it, the audience is huge. It's, you have to get there early to get a decent seat, and as an educator, an elementary school teacher who's taking time off, it's amazing to see the pre-reading skills they're really supporting and getting to the kids before they get to our doorstep. So.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to have to call a halt to this because the show's over. Sari Feldman of the Public Library Association, well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. It was a pleasure.
Okay. And Lara Clark at the Statistics Office, the American Library Association, thank you, too.
Thanks, Dee. This has been great. It's been wonderful talking with your callers as well.
All right. Well, next week on Talk of Alaska, the subject will be the future of the Arctic, and we'll have Charles Emerson of the World Economic Forum. Yeah, the World Economic Forum. This is a guy that's taken an international view of the Arctic Ocean and where things are going to go with it, and he'll be with us on the next Talk of Alaska. At the controls, Dave Waldron, and on the phones, this is Josh Edge, and it looked like Connie back there. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.